Love what you hear? Be sure to check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/finishthefight for exclusive episodes, insights, and even our D&D adventure. Welcome back to Finish the Fight, a gaming podcast,
where we produce and develop the highest quality gaming research in podcast form.
I am your host, Alex Kendall.
And I am your host, Derek Baker.
And today, we're talking about a game that is near and dear to my heart. It's one of my fun JRPGs I played growing up, and it's one of those that continues on within the Tales series. Of course, today we're going to be talking about Tales of Symphonia.
Yeah, man, a neat little, like, almost, I feel like, more of a cutesy type of RPG that we don't see too many of. Like, I feel like they're always dark and brooding, or they're, like, really over-the-top bright and colorful, and there's not a lot of in-between. And I feel like Tales of Symphonia is more like that. Of course, really traditional within that JRPG format, but still like a little bit more of a unique vibe, I think, compared to some of its contemporaries.
Yeah, I mean, because another game around this time that came out is Skies of Arcadia, which, again, is one of my favorite RPGs I've ever played. And they all had these different aesthetics that really built up the kind of turning point of what it looked like, at least for like a North American audience, and kind of getting a lot of those translations built over that wasn't just Final Fantasy. These were the ones that we're finally getting over here that are becoming a little bit more mainstream at the time, especially with the GameCube and other iterations coming out. And it really shifted it to people knowing kind of in a mainstream what a JRPG was. So let's get to talking about Tales. Tales of Symphonia is an action role-playing game released for the Nintendo GameCube on August 29th, 2003 in Japan. It was published by Namco and is the fifth core product of the Tales series. The game was localized and released in North America on July 13, 2004, and in Europe on November 19, 2004. In Japan, the game was ported for the PlayStation 2 with additional content and was released on September 22, 2004. The game takes place in the fictional world called Silveron and follows Lloyd Irving. Lloyd accompanies his childhood friend, Colette Brunel, who is destined to go on a journey to save their world. As their journey progresses, they learn that saving Silveron endangers Tethella, a world parallel to their own. The game's central theme is a, quote, RPG that resonates with you. Now, the game's reception was generally positive. It received a Japan Game Awards in 2003, and had received re-releases under the Player's Choice and PlayStation 2 The Best labels. In the United States, over 100,000 copies were sold during the first 2 weeks and has sold 2.4 million copies worldwide across all platforms, making it the best-selling title in the franchise. The game has been adapted into 7 manga collections, 2 novel series, 7 drama CDs, and an OVA anime series. A sequel entitled Tales of Symphonia: Dawn of the New World was released for the Wii in 2008. Tales of Symphonia and its sequel were collected as a PlayStation 3 high-definition release in Tales of Symphonia Chronicles in 2013. A Steam version was released on February 2, 2016, and a remastered version was released for the Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One on February 17th, 2023.
Now let's talk about a studio that we're all probably at least a little familiar with, and that is Namco Limited, which was a Japanese multinational video game and entertainment company headquartered in Ota, Tokyo. It held several international branches, including Namco America in Santa Clara, California, Namco Europe in London, Namco Taiwan in Kaohsiung, and Shanghai Namco in mainland China. Namco was founded by Masaya Nakamura on June 1, 1955, as Nakamura Saisa Kusho, beginning as an operator of coin-operated amusement rides. After reorganizing to Nakamura Saisa Kusho Company Limited in 1959, A partnership with Walt Disney Productions provided the company with the resources to expand its operations. In the 1960s, it manufactured electromechanical arcade games such as the 1965 hit Periscope. It entered the video game industry after acquiring the struggling Japanese division of Atari in 1974, distributing games such as Breakout in Japan. The company renamed itself Namco in 1977 and published GB, its first original video game, a year later. Among Namco's first major hits was the fixed shooter Galaxian in 1979. It was followed by Pac-Man in 1980, the best-selling arcade game of all time. Namco prospered during the golden age of arcade video games in the early 1980s, releasing popular titles such as Galaga, Xevious, and Pole Position. Namco entered the home console market in 1984 with conversions of its arcade games for the MSX and the Nintendo Family Computer. Its American division majority acquired Atari games in 1985 before selling a portion of it in 1987 following disagreements between the two companies. Arguments over licensing contracts with Nintendo led Namco to produce games for competing platforms such as the Sega Genesis, TurboGrafx-16, and PlayStation. Namco continued to produce hit games in the 1990s, including Ridge Racer, Tekken, and Taiko no Tatsujin. Namco endured numerous financial difficulties in the late 1990s and 2000s as a result of the struggling Japanese economy and diminishing arcade market. In 2005, Namco merged with Bandai to form Namco Bandai Holdings, a Japanese entertainment conglomerate. It continued producing games until it was merged into Namco Bandai Games in 2006. Namco produced several multi-million selling game franchises, such as Pac-Man, Galaxian, Tekken, Tails, Ridge Racer, and Ace Combat. It operated video arcades and amusement parks globally, and also produced films, toys, and arcade cabinets, as well as operated a chain of restaurants. Namco is remembered in retrospect for its unique corporate model, its importance to the industry, and its advancements in technology. Its successor, Bandai Namco Entertainment, and its subsidiaries continue to use the Namco brand for their video arcades and other entertainment products.
Yeah, one of the big things that, you know, the Namco corporate brand, or like kind of the corporate importance to the industry, one of the things they made you do, no matter what your position was, is you had to work in an arcade, and you had to work various positions throughout the company to understand what your employees, no matter what their levels were, went through. So even if you were an incoming like CFO, you still had to work and, you know, shell out coins for whatever the arcade cabinets were just to get that feel. And I think I really appreciate that as a company, so you can understand where their culture is built and you don't lose touch or lose sight of those under you who are working these jobs that are quote unquote lesser jobs than wherever you are in the company. And I think that's really what kept a lot of this together and has really allowed even Bandai Namco to really succeed in the market that it's sitting in.
That's right. Namco invented Undercover Boss.
Exactly.
You heard it here first on the Finish the Fight podcast.
Exactly. Now, the game itself, talking about Tales of Symphonia, was first announced on May 8th, 2002, by Namco to be one of the many titles it would be releasing on the Nintendo GameCube. Namco stated it would be a part of the Tales of Phantasia series and expected comics, animation, drama CDs, and novels to be spun off from the game. Its name was revealed to be Tales of Symphonia in February of 2003. An April 2003 edition of Famitsu revealed the game had been in development for 2 years, that its developers are the same from Tales of Eternia, and that the game will have the most main characters in the Tales series and will be the first 3D game in the series. During E3 2003, a North American localization was confirmed. A conference by Namco on June 9th, 2003 revealed the game will be on two discs, and its theme song will be Starry Heavens by Day After Tomorrow, which is remixed as Starry Heavens version 2013, based on the orchestra version, which is also performed by the band's lead singer, Misano in the PlayStation 3 version and in both the Japanese and Western releases. To celebrate its release in Japan, the game was bundled with a symphonic green Nintendo GameCube. For the North American version, the localization producer replaced Starry Heavens with an orchestral anthem and focused on hiring professional voice actors to dub the game in order to appeal to the Western audience. The game was released in Japan, as we had said, in August of 2003, and was localized in North America and Europe on July 13, 2004 and November 19, 2004, respectively. During the second week of April 2004, Weekly Shonen Jump announced a PlayStation 2 port of Tales of Symphonia. It received new in-game additions, and its theme song is Soshite Boku ni Dekiru Koto, or And Thus, I Can Do It, by Day After Tomorrow as well, and it was performed by the band's lead singer, Misono, in the PlayStation 3 version on both. It was released exclusively in Japan on September 22, 2004, and re-released under the PlayStation 2 The Best label on July 7th, 2005.
So let's talk a little bit about the game's scenario. Takumi Miyajima, the game's writer, explained that Tales of Symphonia was planned to create a unique symphonia, dependent on the player's choices and the affection system. Miyajima wrote many scenarios, with the most significant events centered on Zelos Wilder. Originally, Zelos' death was supposed to be canon. His survival would have been dependent on the affection system. He would die early on if he was ranked the lowest in the affection system, would die at the end if he ranked in the middle, and would only survive if he ranked the top. However, the development staff suggested having Kratos Arian return to the party, and the team discussed how it would work. The change in scenario had Miyajima rework Zelos' death into a non-canon path of the story. While generally a self-contained story, Symphonia apparently takes place within either the same or a similar timeline to the first Tales game, Tales of Phantasia. The sequel, Tales of Symphonia Night of Ratatosk, localized in English as Tales of Symphonia Dawn of the New World, was announced on July 20th, 2007 for the Wii. It was released in Japan and North America in 2008 and in Europe a year after. Tales of Symphonia Chronicles was announced on June 1st, 2013 for the PlayStation 3. It contains Tales of Symphonia and Tales of Symphonia Dawn of the New World with remastered graphics and additional content. It was released in Japan on October 10, 2013, and it was released in North America and Europe in February 2014 as both a retail version and download release, with the option to purchase Tales of Symphonia as a standalone release. And of course, there was that remaster as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, gameplay-wise, like previous installments in the Tales series, Tales of Symphonia consists primarily of three major areas: an overworld field map, town and dungeon maps, and a battle screen. The overworld map is a 3D model, featuring a scaled-down version of the game's fictional world, which the player travels through to reach the game's locations. As with preceding games in the series, the world map can be traversed by foot, on the party's quadrupedal pet Noish, and on flying vehicles known as Riards. On field maps, characters are directed across realistically scaled environments. The battle screen is a 3D representation of an area in which the player commands the characters in battles against CPU-controlled enemies. On the overworld and field maps, various skits between the characters can be viewed. They involve animated character portraits, subtitles, and, in the Japanese version, full voice acting. Skits concern anything from character development to side details. Overworld map skits affect Lloyd's relationships with other party members. The player will be able to make certain decisions that imperceptibly affect how the other characters think of Lloyd. Some of these choices have minor ramifications for the game's storyline.
Now, of course, in RPGs and JRPGs, there's always a lot of focus on the battling system. Is it turn-based? Is it sort of a hybrid? So let's talk a little bit about that. During battle sequences, the game uses the multi-line linear motion battle system. Four characters from the party are chosen to battle. Those not controlled by a player are guided by artificial intelligence, with instructions set by the player beforehand. Damage dealt to the opponent fills a unison gauge. When this is full, a unison attack can be triggered, allowing the party to use techniques simultaneously on a single enemy. When certain techniques are combined, a special attack results in additional damage. After battle, a currency called grade is awarded or subtracted based on specific criteria that are fulfilled in battle. It is used to purchase bonuses during New Game Plus. Players are also prompted to cook food after battles if they have the materials. Cooking recipes determine the benefits received, such as health recovery. The degree of the benefit is determined by which character is chosen to cook. Tales of Symphonia's skill system is built around the use of EX gems, which come in four ranks. Each character can equip up to four EX gems and set abilities to those gems. The abilities determine if the characters will learn strike or technical techniques and spells. Combinations of EX gem abilities can also grant additional abilities called EX skills. The development of a character's attributes is determined by their equipped title. Titles are earned through story progression, side quests, or completion of miscellaneous criteria.
Now, I'll give you a quick... Listen, this game is pretty darn long. I put many, many, many hours in as a kid. But we're going to do a quick story composition for you. Lloyd Irving and his friend Gina Sage accompany the Chosen, Colette Brunel, and her guardians, Rain Sage, and Kratos Orion, on her journey of world regeneration. The purpose of the journey is to replenish Silverant with mana, a necessary energy to their survival. The path of the journey consists of five temples, which must be unsealed by Colette. On their journey, they meet Sheena Fujibashi, who comes from Tethelana, a parallel world to Silverant. She tells them about how the two worlds vie for each other's mana through the journey of regeneration. Hoping to find answers from the angel Remiel, the party meets him at the final seal and are betrayed by Remiel and Kratos. Both are revealed to be part of Cruxus, an evil organization led by Mythos Yggdrasil. The party leaves for Tethiala to search for a way to save both worlds and are joined by Zealous Wilder, Pressia Combatir, and Regal Bryant. The party learns that awakening these summoned spirits in both worlds will sever the mana ties between them. Believing that to be the answer, they successfully sever all mana ties between the two worlds. Their actions instead destabilize the Great Seed, the supplier of mana, to both worlds, causing it to grow and engulf Silverant at an exponential rate. After the party re-stabilizes the seed, they learn from Yuan Cafe about the origins of Silverant and Tethiala and how they used to be one world, but was split by Mythos with the Eternal Sword. The party realizes they can save the world if they wield the Eternal Sword, merge the worlds, and germinate the Great Seed. They decide to confront and defeat Mythos before seeking the Eternal Sword. Kratos is revealed to have been gathering materials to have Lloyd use the Eternal Sword. He succeeds, but Mythos survives his apparent death and possesses a member from the party before fleeing to the comet Deris Carlon. Mythos attempts to take the Great Seed with him, but is foiled and killed by Lloyd. Using the Eternal Sword, Lloyd merges Silverant and Tethiala together and germinates the Great Seed into a giant Carlon tree to supply the world with mana. Listen, this sounds so much different as a kid. It was so much cooler than what I just read. But hey, it is what it is. Most stories are kind of like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like a lot of JRPG bullshit to me.
Yeah, it's definitely there.
So we touched on this a little bit, of course. There was more of an extended world, I guess, or other mediums to sort of fill in the gaps of the Tales of Symphonia story. And there was a comic book, or rather a manga. And there were 7 manga adaptations after its release, 6 anthology collections, and a traditional manga series. The first anthology collection, Tales of Symphonia Comic Anthology, consists of 5 volumes, which were released between November 25, 2003 and February 25, 2006 by Ichijinsha. The second anthology collection, Tales of Symphonia Yankomo Kings, is a 4-panel comic. It consists of 5 volumes released between November 25th, 2003 and December 25th, 2006 by Ichijincha. A third anthology collection entitled BC Anthology Collection Tales of Symphonia had 2 volumes published by Mag Garden in February 2005 and 2007. The fourth anthology collection is BC Anthology Collection Tales of Symphonia Yankomo Short Comic Collection and consists of a single volume, which was released by Mag Garden on October 10, 2007. The fifth anthology collection is Super Comic Theater, Tales of Symphonia. It consisted of 2 volumes, which were released by Square Enix on May 27, 2005 and September 16, 2005. The sixth anthology collection is Tales of Symphonia Comic Anthology, The Best, and is a single volume released on June 5, 2010 by Ichijincha. The manga series by Hitoshi Ichimura was titled Tales of Symphonia and was an adaptation of the game storyline. The first 4 chapters were serialized between the April and July 2005 editions of monthly comic Blade. Future chapters were released in tankobon volumes by Mag Garden thereafter. 6 volumes were released, the first released on August 10, 2005, and the last 2 were released on July 10th, 2007.
We also had some books out there. Tales of Symphonia has spun off 2 novel series adaptations, 4 strategy guides, a character book, an official scenario book, and an art book. The first novel series is titled Tales of Symphonia and is written by Kiyoshi Yuki. It consisted of 3 novels released between November 21st and December 20th, 2003 by Shueisha. The second novel series is titled Tales of Symphonia, Radiance of Time, and is written by Sarah Yajima. It consists of 4 volumes released between December 20th, 2003 and June 19th, 2004 by Enterbrain. An afterstory by the same author was released on September 18th, 2004. 2 strategy guides under the V-Jump Books brand were published by Shueisha, The GameCube Guide, was released on August 29th, 2003, and the PlayStation 2 guide on September 22nd, 2004. Namco Bandai Games released 2 official strategy guides on October 1st, 2003 and October 27th, 2004 for the GameCube and PlayStation 2, respectively. Tales of Symphonia illustration, Koshi Fujishima's character work, is a book by the game's designer, Koshi Fujishima, and was released on January 26, 2004 by Ichijincha. It provides details on the character's backstory and how their design came to be. Tales of Symphonia official scenario book was released on June 26, 2008 by Namco Bandai. The book details the history of the world and characters. And finally, Tales of Symphonia, the animation visual complete picture book, is an art book for the anime, released on March 28, 2013, by ASCII Media Works.
There were 7 drama CDs based on the game's plot that were produced by Frontier Works. Drama CD Tales of Symphonia, parentheses, A Long Time Ago, 1, 2, and 3, are stories preceding the game. They were released between July 23, 2004 and September 24, of 2004. Drama CD Tales of Symphonia Anthology 1, parentheses, the Rodeo Ride Tour, first part and second part, follow Shina, Fujibayashi, and Zelos Wilder as they tour the world a year after the events of the main game. The 2 CDs were released on May 25th and June 24th of 2005. Tales of Symphonia Comic Market 78 and Tales of Symphonia Comic Market 79 are side stories with guest characters from Tales of Vesperia and Tales of Graces, respectively. The Tales of Symphonia original soundtrack was published by Digicube on October 1st, 2003, and consists of 4 discs. It debuted at 98 on Oricon's charts. The soundtrack was re-released on October 27th of 2004 by King Records Japan for the PS2 port of Tales of Symphonia.
And finally, wrapping up all of our bonuses that Tales was creating for their content, we have the animation. Tales of Symphonia, the animation, was an OVA series animated by Ufotable and produced by Genian, Universal Entertainment, and Frontier Works. It consists of 4 episodes, which were released direct-to-video on 4 separate DVDs on June 8th, August 10th, October 24th, and December 21st of 2007. They were later released in a Blu-ray disc collection on September 26, 2008. The series later re-released on Universal Media Disc between June 25th and July 23rd, 2010, and on May 8th, 2010, the series aired on ATX as a promotion to the sequel of the series. The episodes use 3 pieces of theme music. The opening theme is All Materia by Iri Kawai, and the 2 ending themes were Wish by Kaori Hitika and Let's Go Home by Nana Mizuki. The sequel series, Tales of Symphonia, the animation Tethala episode, was announced during Tales' Festival 2008. It consists of 4 episodes, which were released on March 25th, May 26th, September 23rd, 2010, and February 25th, 2011. All 4 episodes received an early screening. The episodes used the opening theme Tenku no Canaria, or Canary in the Sky, by Nana Mizuki, and the ending theme, Beyond the Prayers, by Akiko Shikata. Ending theme of the 4th episode is Tethala Sui no Kodomo Tachi by Akiko Shikata. The 2nd sequel, Tales of Symphonia, the animation, the United World episode, concludes the anime's plot, and it consists of 3 episodes released directly to DVD and Blu-ray on November 23rd, 2011, June 20th, 2012, and October 21st, 2012. All 3 episodes had early screenings, and they were available around Japan and featured different theme songs. A Blu-ray box set containing all 3 series was announced on June 1st, 2013, and released on November 6th of that year.
Tales of Symphonia garnered generally favorable reception from critics, according to review aggregator Metacritic. Critics have praised the game for its real-time battle system. GameSpy described the battle system as wonderfully fast and to the point, while G4 Tech TV noted its accessibility and potential to attract non-RPG gamers. The visuals were praised for their cel-shading effects and anime-influenced art direction, with Jeremy Jastrab of PALGN saying that the stylish characters, animations, and special effects enhance the game's battle sequences. However, David Smith of 1UP.com disliked the lack of detail and facial expression in the character models, remarking that the rare occasions where they do show emotion come across as disturbingly jarring. He negatively compared the character designs to Fujishima's earlier work in Tales of Phantasia, saying that Symphonia's characters lacked the personality of those in the preceding title, and claimed that any number of cheaper artists could have delivered equally inspired designs. Smith also criticized the cel shading style as uneven and shaky compared to that of Jet Set Radio. The settings were admired for their detail and variety, with some commenting that the background art transitioned well into a 3D format from the classic Tales titles. Jastrab was stunned by the lack of slowdown during the game's chaotic action segments, and Benjamin Turner of GameSpy was also amazed by the consistently high frame rate, which he regarded as, quote, a great bonus in a time when most RPGs are content to chug at 30 frames per second. Rob Fahey of Eurogamer and Jastrab were disappointed by the game's lack of cutscenes in the vein of the traditionally animated opening cinematic. The in-game cutscenes were described by the EGM reviewers and Jastrab as dull and a little underdone. Fahey and GameSpot's Bethany Massimilla remarked that the game's attempt at depth of field effects in some scenes resulted in the characters appearing smeared rather than out of focus. The overworld's presentation was criticized as underwhelming. Some compared its level of detail to titles from the previous generation of consoles, while Jastrab argued that the quality would not have been passable even in that context. Massimilla additionally faulted the camera in these portions, explaining that it required frequent adjustment and sometimes obscured incoming enemies.
Reactions to the music were mixed. Some regarded the score as unremarkable, which was a source of disappointment for Fahey, as he felt the beautifully constructed world deserved a more impressive soundtrack. Jastreb deemed the music exceptional and stellar, saying that it captures the mood of the relevant scenarios with virtual perfection, while avoiding the repetitious nature of anything related to anime. Masamela observed that the soundtrack held true to the tale's norm of combining wind instruments and bells in pleasing ways for main themes. Turner and IGN's Mary Jane Irwin respectively described Sakabura's score as a typically fine piece of work and pleasantly decent, though Irwin remarked that the musical variety was relegated to dialogue-oriented events, with the battle and overworld themes taking up most of the playtime. The voice acting was commended, with Smith remarking that the characters were more fun to hear than they are to look at. He added that the repartee between Lloyd and Janice elevated them above their archetypes. Fahey noted that his praise for the voice acting was rare, as he was not a fan of dubbing and was slightly disappointed that the skits were not voiced as well, which he said resulted in them feeling drawn out. Although Jastreb approved of the voice acting's professional quality, he mentioned that some of the dialogue was not well placed, explaining that, quote, there is no building of feeling or creation of tension. It pretty much bursts onto the scene. However, Irwin considered the delivery to be flat and stilted, observing that emotion is often expressed at the wrong times, or not at all, and conversations rarely sound natural. Turner also deemed the voices to be so-so, opening that while the characters' battle vocalizations were sufficient, the actors lacked the range needed for the emotionally demanding scenes, which he said were held back by generally inept direction in the cutscenes.
Responses to the narrative were mixed, with some considering the story to be familiar and predictable. The reviewers of Nintendo Power said that the story was told with wonderful craft, and were surprised that the player-controlled character does not carry the Chosen One role. Jastreb argued that the story held never-ending depth underneath its surface, though he warned of the script's excessive moralizing. Jonathan Metz of Planet GameCube agreed that the plot was standard, though he remarked that the setup was unusually blunt, and that you are told the implications of the quest right up front. However, he proposed that the narrative could assuage GameCube owners desiring a traditional RPG and describe the ending sequence as beautiful and powerful. Star Dingo of GamePro compared the story's combination of heart, warmth, humor, sadness, and peril to the works of Rumiko Takahashi and proclaimed the writing to be some of the best among console RPGs, elaborating that, quote, the tragedies really strike home, and the characters all have distinct voices, speaking their lines with a welcome sense of subtle irony and self-awareness about RPG cliches. Fari acknowledged that the premise was simple and cliche. He said that the plot twists were well employed. Irwin was unengaged with the story, which she attributed to what she deemed a flawed localization. She explained that the dialogue is often awkward and drawn out. Word choice ranges from overly formal to random slang. The style is all over the linguistic map with little regard to who's speaking. The Nintendo Power reviewers and Metz were satisfied with the story's pace, while Turner remarked that the narrative meandered at times. The characters were said to be likable and well-developed. Metz compared the cast to that of The Lord of the Rings, in that they initially seem simple and stereotypical, but almost feel like real people by the end of the story. Fahey singled out Lloyd's development and was thankful that the writers were of the persuasion, which says that dark revelations of the past are not a substitute for creating a proper personality for your characters.
Now, it's a lot to take in as we get to a lot of the negative impact that we're seeing kind of in what is, you know, a pretty harsh review, I think, overall. But, I mean, we're seeing this be nominated as like best GameCube game of 2004, best role-playing game, games of excellence. You know, it's put on Nintendo Power's top 107 list of best 200 Nintendo games of all time. Is it the best in terms of even the series? I'm biased. I really enjoyed this game as a kid, and I kind of got out of the Tales series, I guess, after this. The last that I interacted with was Tales of Arise. I played it over at PAX West when it was getting launched. It's a great series. I love certain JRPGs. Fire Emblem is one of my favorite series ZZs of all time. And they all in general go along this way where it's all set in vaguely the same universe or the same idea of a universe with little to no crossover unless there's specifically some crossover aspects of it. And this being one of the first that Namco brings out in the Tales series to be 3D, to take on a whole other series, to transition GameCube to PlayStation, and to be the best selling and really the intro, I think, for a lot of mainstream, as I said at the top of the episode, a lot of mainstream Westerners playing a game like this and getting a JRPG story, I think makes it and credits it for being a very important game, even just for that reason alone.
Yeah, that's really where I was going to head with that is I feel that this game, while if you were to rank it to other JRPGs, I think that a lot of the criticisms within the reviews that we just read are valid.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to like what Nintendo really had as output in that category, there really wasn't a lot of options. So I think that Tales of Symphonia was really the game that the GameCube needed to sort of have a more definitive option within that category,
yeah,
for the console. And, you know, the GameCube, I feel like, is a very love it or hate it console.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had a PlayStation 2, you had basically everything available to you. If you had a GameCube, it was really, really, I mean, slim pickings on the games. Of course, always the Nintendo stuff,
sure,
which is well made for Nintendo and runs well and all the things that you expect. But if you're looking for like more groundbreaking things or things that I think are designed for a really wide, not as niche audience, that stuff is a lot of times hard to come by, I think, on the Nintendo consoles. So Tales of Symphonia sort of allowing longtime Nintendo fans, whether it be, you know, adults or kids in your case, you know, get something like this, get their hands on, and really, I think you could almost view this as like a really great starter,
yes,
JRPG. It's not the most, it's long, but it's not like the most overwhelming game that you could get into, right? It's not like jumping into like Xenoblade Chronicles or something, which is like hundreds and hundreds of hours of content if you really want to go through everything. And a lot of JRPGs are super text heavy and, you know, there's a lot of adult themes, but this game really has a lot of, you know, there was criticism for the localization and the voices not being consistent, but as a kid, I think being able to relate a little bit more through some of that language,
mm-hmm,
probably makes it more approachable in that sense.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was, again, around this time, most people knew JRPGs or RPGs at the time to be kind of the Final Fantasy. You know, anything else that we kind of saw from that weren't really the traditional way of a JRPG. We did get a lot of stuff like Castlevania and a lot of other ones coming out of Nintendo that were RPG, more action adventure, I guess, in a way. But to get that true experience of the grinding 100 hours, like you're saying, the grinding 200 hours, we're seeing a lot more of that. It's become much, much, much more mainstream in the Western audiences to have those JRPGs. And you're right. If you wanted to play Japanese games, it was Sony. You'd get a PlayStation. They had everything that was adapted over, whether it was a good adaptation or not. You would get those over on that console. With Nintendo, it was so hit or miss. The only ones I remember even playing that were adaptations of that was Phantasy Star Online and pretty much Tales of Symphonia, Skies of Arcadia. You get into more of them, and I think the GameCube was more the intro to it versus coming off of the N64. But yeah, this is very much the light version. If you want to dip your toe into it and you want to get an idea of, you know, a typical anime plotline and experience that in a very easy environment, a very fun environment, very low stakes, the Tales series is very fun for that. And you know, Tales of Symphonia being the top selling, it makes sense. It's professionally voice acted at this point. for most of the scenes. I know they're talking about some of those, the side scenes, the personality scenes, or the, you know, affirmation, the affection scenes, but that we've seen a lot of games now. We even see that in like Pokemon Go, of just like getting your affection up, getting this as being a different statistic in it. I understand those not being voiced because those are kind of, you know, secondary things, but having like most of, if not all, the mainline game have that in their cutscenes, I think is fantastic. We don't expect it. We don't need it per se when it comes to these Western audiences jumping into JRPGs, but it is a very welcomed thing that does allow you to attach yourself to these characters and get to know them better.
Yeah. And overall, I think that a lot of that sort of puts the reviewers in a tough place,
mm-hmm.
because if you're someone who has experienced, I think, the full like JRPG experience with those very in-depth relationship, affection things, you've experienced these in-depth adult themes and these very long hours, and that was something that you played and you said, yes, I like that. Then I think that when you jump over to Tales of Symphonia, it's a little bit of an unfair thing, because I think that this game has to exist. I think that games as an entry point into JRPGs need to exist. Games like Pokemon that are very, very, like, they're RPGs, but they're so, like, simple
mm-hmm.
that it's very black and white. And of course, they've added a few more complexities over the years. But when they originally released that game, very straightforward RPG. Having those things as a way to get players into the market, I think is important, strategical. As you said, more of those games now have come to the following Nintendo consoles. There was a good amount of stuff for the Wii. I mean, just right off the bat going into the next one. But just thinking about like what was really available in the slim pickings for the GameCube, you can go and have that validated just by the prices of like old GameCube games if you really want to go and try and hunt those things down versus, you know, a PlayStation 2 game. You might get the occasional one, but GameCube games were just, the good ones were so hard to find. And they still, Nintendo still, I think, sort of does this with their games that they're not confident will do that well in the Western market, where they sort of create this artificial shortage of games, basically. Like Octopath Traveler was a really hard Switch game to find for a while.
Yeah.
You know, they I think they are very tepid with introducing games like this to the Western audience. But all that being said, like, I think the game is a great game. I don't see anything within those reviews that I feel like is so overwhelmingly negative that you can't ignore it. I feel like it's more nitpicky stuff based on players that were sort of comparing it to other already established, well-established JRPGs that weren't trying to sort of break into this other market via the Nintendo GameCube.
Yeah, and I think there's such a variety now, especially when you're talking about a digital market. Whereas before, I mean, you're having to buy physical discs, you're having to buy physical media. Yeah. And so it is hard to do localization and translation and hoping that you're going to get sales from it. Because, you know, for all the successes we've seen, there's plenty of failures all about. You know, we see that even in just Microsoft trying to sell, you know, kind of Western targeted games in Japan, even the Halo series, it did well, quote unquote, yeah, for like Microsoft games, but nothing comparing to a lot of like the Nintendo and Sony stuff that sold there. So it is very tough to kind of predict that. And, you know, we're getting a lot more of those styles, even in indie developers that are mimicking styles. We're even getting, you know, more Yakuza games, which honestly are some of like the most ridiculous and so much more ridiculously fun RPGs that are coming out of Japan. And it's cool to see like just these different varieties coming about. You know, I've got a couple friends that I grew up with that were just Tales fanatics. They played all the Tales series. You know, they've went to conventions and cons and cosplay as Tales characters, and it builds, you know, their own audience with it. And we see that through a lot of different games that have kind of gone this anime route in terms of the RPG. versus more of a realistic route in some like the Final Fantasy looks and others like that. You know, it's cool to see it, and I always welcome more competition, more into the market. And I think Tales, at least for me, was my gateway J game that I kind of worked into. You know, that and Skies of Arcadia were kind of the two that like brought me into that sphere that sunk 100 hours, you know, for me to put into these games.
And I don't really know of too many other JRPG games that really had the success, I think, in the other mediums that Tales did, where it's, you know, it's it is a manga and an anime, and you're getting all of these other parts of the story. I think that people really like that stuff today, sort of rare for the time, which I think helps to set it apart. And helps to sort of nurture that fan base where they become more mega fans rather than, you know, a lot of people love Final Fantasy characters, Fire Emblem characters, sure, but sort of a lot of those characters, it's like you play the game with them and then you're done. That's it.
Yes.
They're gone and you don't care about them anymore necessarily. Maybe you liked them for that story, but there's not like an additional thing that you can go and see these characters again and get more background on another story per se without really, really searching for that content. Whereas this was very like in your face, this is what we're doing. And I think that that is a great another layer that helps attribute the success that this game had versus sort of, you know, being placed up against some of these reviews that, you know, unfortunately had to sort of give a lot of mixed feedback for their feelings about specifically the game and not Tales, I think, as a whole. So for me, you know, this game is probably like, I think like an 8 out of 10. For me, looking at the game itself, I see some of the criticism. I see some of the artwork being maybe a barrier when it comes to the characterization, but beyond that, like, just too important to, I think, the GameCube and the Western audiences to give it anything less than that.
Yeah, I think that's it. And even like, yeah, bringing up the talk of just like the multimedia approach that a lot of JRPGs had. I mean, even in Final Fantasy, we saw several movies, saw some comics, some books come out with that. In the Western audience, we mostly saw books. Halo series obviously has plenty of books into it. I'm staring at one on my shelf right now I bought. I remember I loved reading. None of you have played this game. I'm saying none of you have played it. It is, I believe, a Microsoft published one for the Xbox. It was Brutal Force. I don't know why I bought the book. I enjoy the book. But we're seeing more and more of this multimedia presence coming out, especially with Netflix picking up a lot of stuff. We're seeing Dragon's Dogma. We're seeing Castlevania. You know, we're seeing plenty of other titles. Fallout's coming out. You know, the Halo show. All this stuff that's getting these either live actions or animated representations into it. And we've seen that tried in Western audiences for a long time for movies or attempts at shows that we're seeing. But it's just, it's really cool to see the multimedia aspects of it. And it helps that, you know, the video game industry is, in terms of media, dwarfs everything. So there's a little bit of money there to put in these other facets.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I think it's important for its time. If I had to give it a rating, I would give it, honestly, how cool Lloyd was and still is to me with his sweet red jacket, dual wielding swords. You don't get cooler than that. It's really the coolest thing you could get from like a 13-year-old boy being like, yes. Listen, that one kid, it beats ball and stick. That
look, if he was a Ninja Turtle, like this would have been top tier.
That's what I'm saying. So yeah, if I
10 out of
it's,
10.
It's pretty much if you actually it's 11 out of 10. Two swords up, that's a 1 and a 1. 11 out of 10 in sword terms.
That's good. That's good stuff. That's a good review. It's logical. It's math based. Exactly. Shape based. Exactly. Geometry.
Stay in school.
Research for this episode was done by Alex Kendall and Derek Baker. The intro and outro music for this episode was given to us by our friend Evan Barr, and our lovely artwork was provided by Aaron Shattuck.
Lovely, beautiful people, as well as the beautiful people over on our Patreon. You can check us out at patreon.com/finishthefight. Want to thank a few select members today with Snide T-Bird, Nick Hyman, Anthony Gooch, and Seth Ralston. Thank you all so much for your support.
You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or most likely your favorite podcast listening platform. If you haven't yet, please drop us a review. It helps us out a lot. We love to hear from you. And if you are a Spotify listener, there are Q&As that we have in every episode. Go ahead and read those. Give us a response and maybe yours will get published.
And you can check us out on Twitch. You can see me at twitch.tv/sourman70. That is twitch.tv/sourman70. As well as Derek over at twitch.tv/thebakerman247. That is twitch.tv/thebakerman247.
You can follow this podcast on Instagram and Twitter. We are also on Discord. It's free to join. There is a link in every description of every episode. Go ahead and click that, and we would love to see you there.
And with that, this has been our coverage of Tales of Symphonia. Are there any other RPGs or series that you think we should cover? Are there ones that you think didn't really make it to the States or maybe didn't make it overseas that you think needs more light shined on it? Let us know, and we may cover it in a future episode. As always, I am your host, Alex Kendall.
And I am your host, Derek Baker.
And this has been Finish the Fight, a gaming podcast.